Hi, I'm Maggie.
And I'm Nicole. Welcome to the DAC Dyslexia and Coffee Podcast. We're so happy you could join us. We're both moms and dyslexia interventionists who want to talk about our students and children. What dyslexia is, how it affects our kids, strategies to help, and topics related to other learning disabilities will all be covered in this podcast. Parents are not alone, and we want to give voice to the concerns and struggles we are all having. This is a safe place to learn more about how to help our children grow and succeed in school and the world. Grab a cup of coffee and enjoy the conversation.
Hi, everybody. So we like to start our episodes with the concept of the week. That is our opportunity as practitioners to kind of peel back the curtain a little bit and let everybody into an intervention session. This week's concept of the week is actually just finding books. So a little bit of a different pivot, I guess, today. So just kind of how do we choose materials for our kids, which is actually our topic. We actually, believe it or not, talk about this quite a bit with our students. So, and our parents, we get asked, how do we pick books for our kids and how do we pick books that are appropriate for all ages and stages. Matter of fact, I just had this conversation with my son this very morning. his class goes to the public library once a month. And last month he came home with books that were just really, they were fine. They were graphic novels, but they were really, he couldn't really read any of the words independently. And the storylines were just also really complex. And so he was looking for some ideas of things that he could check out for this week, this month's trip to the library. So how do we pick appropriate books for our kids?
Well, we're going to go by age level today. So let's start with babies and toddlers.
Yes, baby and toddler books.
So cute.
So fun. So fun and so cute. I love picking out baby and toddler books. Very young children, right? They are just so attracted to those bright colors. Even those pictures of just kind of simple objects. They are listeners and they respond well to books with really simple text and some good rhythms, even some books without words, which may sound a little strange coming from Nicole and I, but my kids had some board books that were just, actually, they were black and white, and they were just really high contrast pictures of objects, and it was a really good way to kind of tie, right? We're not looking at graphemes quite yet, but essentially, what is a word? It's a word picture, right? Mm-hmm. So they can kind of stimulate their vision and help them to kind of create their own stories.
Yeah, so they're very delighted with like those board books. Also, they don't get ruined as fast as a regular book,
fast.
Right? Or cloth books, because then they can hold them a little bit better. And by mostly they're indestructible. I can tell you my kids destroy them anyways.
But oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
And reading to babies and toddlers, this really helps develop that language, literacy, and emotional social skills.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes we even get asked, you know, what are we even doing? Why are we engaging in reading with a baby, especially? There's just so many skills that we're working on. Working on those language skills. We're building vocabulary. It exposes babies and toddlers to new words, and it helps them develop a rich vocabulary. Listening, right? Reading helps babies learn to listen to story. It really expands the amount of time they can attend to a task.
Right. And it also helps develop memory. Reading helps babies develop their memory. They start looking at letters and being able to recognize them. Books with realistic images can help them recognize letters also. and literacy skills. This is where they start developing those pre-literacy skills. You know, where to open the book, where's the front of the book, where's the top of the page, where's the bottom of the page, and you read from left to right. Mm-hmm. So those all help babies develop pre-literacy skills.
Yeah. Even it's so cute when they start pointing to some of the words.
Yes.
That's just, yeah, they're developing just the idea of a book and how a book works.
Correct. Because like we said in previous episodes, you know, language is very important to literacy. And also being able to recognize those, being able to take those pre-literacy skills and apply them later.
Exactly.
That's what they need to be able to be good readers.
Yeah,
exactly. In the future.
You know, and we're working on other emotional skills, which are right. So important. We're developing empathy. Reading helps babies and toddlers understand feelings mm-hmm. and how to handle them. Right, those really simple stories where somebody steals another kid's truck. Those kind of like, oh no, poor Bob.
Reading also helps babies develop their imaginations. I mean, where does that first come out, right? You can definitely see that that's important for later play.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how do babies and little kids learn?
Through play.
It's also a good bonding between experience for parents and children, right? Because they're both engaged in an activity together. Things that, you know, build that relationship.
Yeah. You know, a lot of times, not always, but a lot of times that reading time, it's often tied to like a bedtime routine. Mm-hmm. Usually, you know, you're kind of snuggled together. Mm-hmm. I do miss that really snuggly reading time. My reading time now is all elbows and knees. but you know, that, I don't know, those are just those moments that feel so cozy and that really, mm-hmm. you know, your baby and toddler, they're probably not going to remember the books that you read with them necessarily, but, you know, their bodies remember that closeness. And
right.
It helps associate books with, you know, love.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important.
So some good books that we picked out that our kids liked are things like Rainbow Fish. I don't know.
Yes.
That's such a good book.
My children love that book.
Mine did too. That's Not My Monkey.
So cute.
The Very Hungry Caterpillar and If You Give a Mouse a Cookie.
Yes.
Mainly that rhyming part of that one, I think, was what everybody loved.
Yes.
And it got kind of silly.
It gets silly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's so many other ones of that. So if you give a dog a donut, if you give a moose a muffin.
Right.
They're super cute stories. They're very simple. Mm-hmm. They teach that, you know, if-then kind Correct. Of relationship. You know, anything by Eric Carle. We've got engaging illustrations. You
right.
know, his style really speaks to that age group.
Exactly.
Brown bear. so many times. Another one Millie specifically loved of Eric Carle's was the grumpy ladybug or the grouchy ladybug. She would correct me. So here we are. But the grouchy ladybug. You know, those ones are good. Those really pre-reading skills. This is where I would say it's okay to have a highly patterned book, right? What
right.
do you see? I see a yellow duck looking at me. Here's where we're not, that's good. That's
yeah.
this age group, it's really good for them to practice that routine, even though they're not really reading the words, but understanding that this page does say something.
Correct. So moving on, we're going to go through preschool and kindergarten.
So fun.
So fun. Yeah. So in this group, there's a lot of Mother Goose and nursery stories and books depicting things, familiar objects or experiences that they're currently doing, right? That's really enjoyable for children in this age group. They like listening to slightly more complex texts with a good rhythm or a bunch of words that repeat.
Yes. You know, they're also coordinated enough to have some fun, right? With toy-like books that may pop up or move, right? They may have those, like the flap.
Oh yeah, the flaps.
My kids really, really
loved the flaps. Yeah.
You know, Millie still, and she's definitely in this age group right now. She's 4K. She'll be in kindergarten next year. And she will just flap up, flap down, you know, and she'll go back and forth for quite a long time. And,
yeah,
you know, learn to manipulate, which is great for fine motor.
Yeah, I got to put that fine motor in there too.
Yeah,
yeah. And reading to preschoolers and kindergartners is crucial for their development because it really builds those language skills by exposing them to new words. Fosters the love of reading, strengthens their bond with caregivers. It enhances their listening comprehension, and it prepares them for future academic success by laying the foundation of literacy skills.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, here again, a lot of these key benefits, right, are very similar to reading to babies and toddlers, but we're just upping the ante a little bit here. We've got, you know, vocabulary expansion, overall language development, building those cognitive skills too. They're being able to handle slightly more complex stories. They're able to kind of hold some information from the beginning of the story in their brain a little bit to the end of the story. You can start early on working on those kind of inferencing skills or guessing, huh, I wonder what's going to happen to Timmy. Oh, he ate that chocolate and his mommy told him not to. I wonder what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, so they can kind of start relating things to their own life a little bit. You know, that bonding and connection, not only at home, this is starting to happen, you know, at school too with their teachers and whoever else is in their classroom. My kids both get really excited. Sometimes they'll have some guest readers at school. Mm-hmm. Maybe it might be a librarian or the music teacher pops in and reads a story. And that's like, ooh, so exciting, which is awesome. Yeah. Those listening skills too.
Yeah.
Handling listening to a longer story.
Trying to build that attention span.
Yes. You know, you can, when you do this job enough, you can really kind of tell even the kids who maybe still are antsy and they're walking around and they're doing other things. Maybe their attentiveness doesn't look like you expect. But you start to really be able to tell who is listening.
Right.
And who is not. And, you know, and who doesn't have that stamina yet, which,
right,
you know, that can be built over time.
And then some early literacy skills, getting familiar with the books, the print concepts, the story structure, lays the groundwork for future reading fluency. And it gives us a positive attitude towards learning, because regular reading experiences can cultivate a lifelong love for books and learning, which is really important.
Yeah. You know, and books are such a cool way to expose kids to totally different experiences. My kids are really lucky. We have some close family friends that are big travelers. And every time they travel, they bring back books, children's books from places that they have gone. So my children have books from Switzerland, books from Iceland, books from Scotland, you know, places that they certainly have never been, we don't know anybody personally in those places, but they have read about some really cool traditions that are specific to lots of cool places, that they start to get an understanding that the world is big and mm-hmm. it's not just, you know, our little street.
Exactly. And I think this is kind of a good time too to start modeling reading to yeah. them. Like, you're reading something, whatever it is that's an interest, they're going to see that, oh, we do this every day, or we mm-hmm. do this exactly in our that. Life.
And we use books to learn.
Right.
You know, oh, wow, I didn't know that. I've never heard of that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So some examples in this category is, well, again, that's not my monkey. the very hungry caterpillar, again. If you give a mouse a cookie, brown bear, what do you see? The Dr. Seuss books are really big in this group because mm-hmm. they have lots of repetition and they're kind of silly and they're just easy for them to memorize some of the things. So they, at this time, they're realizing what reading kind of is. And yes. so they want to be doing it.
And that building up that rhyme, that right. is one of the things Dr. Seuss is known for.
Right.
Right. Is the rhyming aspects and the predictability. Mm-hmm. Dr. Seuss is actually a great way to build fluency mm-hmm. because it's a predictable cadence. You know the words are gonna rhyme. You can kind of Correct. Get into a rhythm with that one. Mr. Brown Can Moo. Can you that one?
Yeah.
That my kids love that book. They love to make all the sound effects.
Yes.
In that one. Again, here's like where it's okay to have student or to have kind of kids have books that they like to return to and they have mm-hmm. pretty much memorized.
Right.
You know, that is okay. That is part of building that love of reading. And,
Correct.
You know, we all have stories that we like to read and read again.
Yeah. And like the cat books are similar to the Dr. Seuss books in that yes. they have kind of a beat or a way to kind of move through yes. and you kind of get that. I don't
and
know.
He is groovy, right?
Yeah.
My kids are big Pete the Cat fans.
Mine too.
The How to Catch a, you know, whatever books. My kids have the How to Catch a Unicorn, How to Catch a Dinosaur.
And that's sort of starting to introduce them too of what are their interests, right? Because
yes.
there's tons and tons of those books and
yes.
all different topics.
Yes. And, you know, you've got engaging pictures. They're funny. And the vocab, some of that vocab is a little advanced, mm-hmm. Which is kind of fun because it's a good way to kind of sneak that in there a little bit for them.
Yeah.
Expose them to words they wouldn't usually say
Correct.
Or hear.
Mm-hmm. So going on to the early school years, which is like age 5 to 8.
Yes.
So a few students or children may be able to read before they're in first grade, but most learn during first grade. Some may even learn later. Mm-hmm. But so that's kind of just giving you an idea of where we're kind of looking at.
Yes.
Where they are developmentally. For reading to or with children, select picture books with strong storylines and some character development. So for a child who's reading independently, choose books that are straightforward. They employ words that will be familiar in everyday use. And then some publishers produce books generally called easy readers, which are independent readers that they often enjoy. And it kind of, they sometimes give you like ages or grades on those kind of books.
Yes. You know, those ones are, you know, take those publisher guidelines with a pretty big grain of salt.
Right.
This age has a very wide range of what is developmentally normal.
Right.
This is an interesting age group, even for us when they come to us for assessment. because there is a wide range of what is developmentally normal.
Correct.
And so if your kid, right, is, it's so hard because I never want to tell a parent to not be alarmed, but there is a huge learning uptick in this age group, and every kid is going to hit that at a slightly different pace.
Correct.
So sometimes I feel like I am cautious even about the advice I give to parents, because I never want a parent to get the idea that because I said it should be about developed by the age 7, that, oh my gosh, my kid has a huge problem and oh no, the world is ending, right? The world is not ending today. But that is a good indicator, though. If we are looking at those easy readers and the publishers say this is about the age group and our kids are not lifting some of those words off the page, then is a time to start thinking about, okay, what could be going on here?
Right. Third graders are often able to handle stories with some complexity. So like the vocabulary may be relatively familiar, but then include some more challenging words in them.
Yes. You know, and that vocabulary, a lot of those books written for this age group, they do a great job of allowing a reader to understand maybe a more complex vocabulary word because of context. So they're not throwing vocab word after vocab word after these kids. They might also then rephrase those words and allow a typically developing person to get a lot of that new vocabulary from context.
Right. And in this age group, there's a lot of nonfiction books, and this encourages children to read what topics interest them.
Yes. There are some great series that are informational, you know, the kind of, I Survived is a little bit older probably, but there's a good series that's just all about, I think they're just called All About, and there are a lot of really good pictures in there.
Yeah.
They familiarize kids with captions. They always have a table of contents. They have a glossary. They have an index. But they're very simple.
Right. And they're usually about either a famous person or a favorite famous event.
Yes.
Or something that's based off a true nonfiction.
Yes.
Information.
My son cannot get enough of stuff like that. He absolutely loves a pretty wide range of topics, but he is like a primarily nonfiction kid. He will soak those up, which is really fun.
Some other books that might be interesting in this age group is still the Dr. Seuss books, maybe the Magic Treehouse, Amelia Bedelia books. I like the old version.
I like the old version too.
Charlotte's Web.
Yes.
Pete the Cat Again. In the Unicorn Academy books, maybe. As you can see, because of the wide range, like some students may still be at the Dr. Seuss, liking the patterns, and some other ones might be starting those early chapter books.
This is also an awesome age group for read-alouds. You know, you can start to push the boundaries of longer chapter books, more complex things, if you're reading out loud to your kids.
So now going on to older children, 9 and up, consider who your child is, their personality traits, personal preference, especially when choosing a book. Make a selection with the child in mind. Choose informational books or a novel that's specific interest. Publishers sometimes indicate the cover of the book, the age level again, or the grade level. Again, just take that with a grain of salt. And don't hesitate to choose a book that may be suggested by someone older than your child. If the book is beyond the child's reading ability, it can be read to them.
Yep.
And then later the child can read it. Some picture books, because of the subjects or the artwork, might be just right for an older child too.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if we're talking kind of nonfiction world.
Exactly. Like books about trees. Sometimes it's nice to see what they're talking about with the leaf.
Yeah. I mean, even some books about plants. Aiden checked out some really cool ones that have like watercolor.
Yeah.
Paintings of certain plants, and then also some real photographs of plants. And that's also really fun. You know, I don't want anybody ever to hear us say that we don't love picture books. We do. they're awesome.
And then classic stories are excellent selections for the family to read aloud together. Some children find them more appealing. Some do not. And think of what the child's reading enjoyment is and select books that appeal to that child, because all of our children are different for sure.
Yeah. And I think this is a totally appropriate age to start talking to your kids about. Sometimes you do abandon a book. That's fine.
I continue to read a book
if I don't like it, or I'm not enjoying it, or it's just going way too slow or way too fast. It's fine to abandon a book.
Exactly.
Sometimes we kind of forget to teach them that it's okay. All right. That one's not for you.
Exactly.
That's okay. That doesn't mean reading isn't for you. That means
that book
is not for you. Maybe that genre of books is just not your jam. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. I have stuff that I do not enjoy horror at all. So
no,
I will not
neither.
Be reading horror books. No. Thank you.
And young people do like paper books. Reprints of the hardcover titles are usually part of these. Mm-hmm. Some good examples are, the Dogman book seems to be really big right now.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ivy and Bean books, that's a good series.
Yeah, those are cute.
The Dork Diaries, Diary of a Wimpy Kid, The Never Girls. Here's I Survive the, this is nonfiction, right? Because
yes.
It's I Survived.
I Survived Pearl Harbor. I Survived the Great Earthquake. Those ones. They're really good.
They are really good.
You know, they are technically fiction because they're kind of a novelization of
they have characters,
a true event, but they do have characters that are made up, right? So like realistic nonfiction, mm-hmm. which also is a really cool age group to introduce them to that kind of genre.
And then things like Where the Sidewalk Ends or longer, more deeper
poems.
Yeah.
Which, you know, those are always so funny too, that Shel Silverstein.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good time for those kinds of books. It's okay to have a lot of fun.
Yes. So now students with dyslexia.
Yes. So how does this advice kind of change if we have a student with dyslexia? Our students here in the office, you know, we select books very differently than we would select reading for home. So the first part of our podcast really was all about how do you select books at home? What are they interested in outside of their intervention? Here, we would always start with decodable books. These help students practice a sound or a spelling rule that they just learn. We did have an episode all about decodable books and how they're much, much different than what's called a trade book. So if you're interested, go back and go look and listen to that one.
And with this group of students, a dyslexia interventionist can tell you when the student is ready for a different type of book.
Yes.
Yes.
A really good rule of thumb is to have a student read a page kind of towards the middle of a book. And if they have three or less errors on a page, that's a great level for them. If they have no errors, it's really too easy for them. If we're looking to build skills, I'm not saying don't have them read it. I'm just saying we're not building our reading skills. But if we have more than five errors, it's too hard. They're also not going to be able to build skill. That one's a great one for reading aloud. That's a great one for audio.
Right. And still finding topics that are interesting to the student is very important. And just remember, reading together, having them follow an audiobook or listening to a book on audio is all great ways to read.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we just want them to get the idea that reading is fun, and there's a ton of options. I mean, my biggest piece of advice is those local children's librarians.
They know.
They know their stuff. They are in, you know, they are rubbing elbows with publishers. They are in contact with authors trying to kind of sell them their books. I mean, I absolutely, when I'm picking out books for either myself or my kids, I look at those staff pick shelves at the library. I love those. Why work harder than you have to work?
Exactly.
You know, those librarians, that is their, that's their expertise. So great.
Yes. So Maggie, what's happening beyond dyslexia?
Yeah. So for the beyond dyslexia segment today, Nicole and I thought it would be kind of fun to share sort of how we pick books for ourselves and what we've kind of been into reading lately, which is a strong word. yeah, I really tend to listen to a lot of audiobooks if I'm reading for pleasure. Obviously, I read so much dense text about brain and science and about human development, ADHD, right? I read so much literature for work that is really kind of journals and really dense research articles that, frankly, I find interesting but not that fun. They're not fun reads. So if I want a little escape from that, which I often do, one, I really kind of like to listen to a story, a really good, highly produced audiobook I love. I enjoy reading a good mystery. I do love science fiction. I love fantasy to a point. Probably like science fiction a little more that realm. I recently read a book called The Sicilian Inheritance, which was a pretty interesting novel. It was about a woman who her great aunt passes away, and she had a really close relationship with her. And she learns that she has a plot of land in Sicily that she has inherited from her great-grandmother. And it is about the history of women in the town. This, it's a fictional town. It's a novel. And it's about the history of women in the town and how they kind of held things together when, you know, the men went off to war and kind of what happens to them after that. And it's she uncovers kind of a murder mystery related to her great-grandmother. And it was pretty good. I think I listened to it in like 2 days. That was a good one. What about you?
Yeah, I think for the same for me is we read so much dense text during all the time because we're always learning here. So when I get to pick, I pick something that's very, very fiction that's not anywhere near real life. So like sci-fi, a really good mystery. I do like fantasy. My most recent book was something about an alternate reality where magic is real and the main character fights monsters. So, I mean, when I think because our lives are very hectic and full of chaos, sometimes just taking a break from anything real life. We were just talking right before the podcast of how, as mothers, we can't, like, there's certain books that I read before I was a mother and I thought were awesome. And now I can't even think about them because
yeah, I can't do it. Motherhood has kind of ruined me a little bit.
I guess a good example is The Hunger Games, right? Like, yes. Before I was like, oh, yeah, this is an awesome series and I love worried. And then I had my first kid and I was like, yeah, don't like this anymore because, oh my gosh, I could totally picture my own kid going through this. Yes. And it's,
I will not go back and reread that, I don't think.
No, that one I can't reread.
No, it's so crazy.
Well, thank you for joining us today. Please follow us on social media and reach out if you have any questions or would like to discuss a topic.
And if you do like our show, be sure to follow us and rate us on your favorite podcast player. This is how we reach more listeners and get to help more families. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.